Welcome back to the Mining Pod. Today in the show, I'm joined by Ryan Condrone, CEO of Titan Pool. We talk about revenue strategies for small pools, building a trustless hash rate marketplace, and why every large miner should run their own pool. The future of digital asset mining calls for top technical talent. Enhance your ASIC education with Foundry's hands-on courses. Led by veteran industry instructors, Foundry's three-day mining intensive and five-day mining technician academy programs cover a range of topics, from identifying issues and troubleshooting common hardware failures to coursework covering Bitcoin's global impact. Open to enthusiasts and professionals alike, visit www.foundryacademy.com to learn more and sign up for the course that's right for you. Ryan, welcome to the Mining Pod. I've been meaning to have you on for a while. I think the first time we talked was at, I think it was Bitcoin Miami this year, 2022. I saw you on stage and I was like, oh, I got to get him on the pod. He's eloquent. And now we're here. You know, when we talked then, you could have come on and shilled about how great Bitcoin is. And now I have to have you on and talk about how bearish everything is. So you kind of played yourself there a bit, but again, welcome to the pod.
You know, thank you. It's good to be on. You know, mining in a bear market is just as exciting as mining in a bull market. You know, at the end of the day, we have to be resilient. So yeah.
Well, I like the perspective at the very least. Okay, we'll start off with a little introduction on yourself and Titan Pool, what you guys are up to. I'll leave it there. Yourself and Titan Pool.
Yeah. We run a pool called Titan, titan.io. We launched it about 2 years ago in kind of testing phase, doing a lot of internal testing and benchmarking. We've had some of the world's largest miners benchmark the pool, and we're really happy with the results. The overall strategy with the pool is we have the main pool at Titan as kind of a flagship pool. The goal was never to grow it into this massive public pool. Our mantra at Titan is really every large miner should be running their own pool. They should be signing their own blocks. They should be processing transactions on the network. That's what we think decentralization is. Not just distributed hash rate, but decentralized hash rate is the large miners running their own pools. So we use the main pool at Titan as kind of a flagship pool. We encourage miners to jump in, mine against the pool. It's 0% fee, FPPS. So we're very competitive. It's highly optimized, and we do our best to just do a white glove onboarding into that. As we scale the relationship and as the miners and our clients start scaling the operations, then we start having the discussion of, hey, now's a good time for you to roll out your own pool. So we help them set up their own AWS account or cloud hosting account, and then we can deploy all of our pool infrastructure into the account. And now they're signing their own blocks, they're mining against the network, and they get their own street cred as they get to sign that Coinbase.
Cool. So the pool part, I was actually planning on talking about that a little bit later in the podcast, but you know, brought it up now, so might as well jump right into it. Titan Pool has about 1.4 exahash submitted to it, and that's been growing over the last few weeks, which is awesome. Congrats to you guys. I am curious about the growth plans for a smaller pool, however. And I think we've seen the playbook actually implemented successfully over the last 2 years, especially with the China ban, where we saw Luxor, Foundry, and some of these other America or North American-based pools actually grow quite significantly. I'm wondering, is Titan Pool sort of thinking like the same way, like marketing to American miners, trying to onboard them? Or are you guys more focused on that software as a service, like pool software as a service, and giving that over to like large companies that are wanting to run their own pool?
So, you know, originally when we entered the pool market, that was kind of the vision, was interfacing with US-based miners, having this KYC AML trusted pool, like invite-only pool, and growing that. As we started seeing more hash rate flow into the U.S. and we started realizing, okay, U.S. is going to be a hash rate leader in the world for the foreseeable future, having a narrow approach of just growing a pool doesn't really help the network. It doesn't really help the ecosystem and where we're currently at, where you have the top three pools really control the majority of the blocks. So we had to shift our vision a little bit and just realize, you know, what's the end vision? What's the end goal here? And really the end goal is better pool software and more block producers. And that's really where we shifted to. Starting out, you know, wanting to work in the U.S. space and really focus on U.S. miners was the original vision, and now we're really kind of dovetailing off that and trying to build a more private pool ecosystem.
Okay, awesome. Well, let's turn over to some of the products that you guys are working on. I know you guys are working on a hash product that enables you to like sell hash rate to the marketplace, and it's a Web3 product first. So it uses smart contracts and uses chains as opposed to other services that are trying to do it just by like with OTC desks, where you're just like kind of talking to a third party and they're creating a market between two other participants. Tell me a little bit about that product. I know there's some like news coming up on it. I won't steal your thunder, but interested to know about the product at the very least and how you guys are designing that.
Yeah, definitely. So we're working on a network called Lumerin. We launched the token about a year ago now. And the goal of Lumerin is really this decentralized data routing, where we use a smart contract to broker the stream of data from a sender to a receiver. And it's completely data agnostic. So it can really be used for any type of socket or data stream. Since we are in the world of pools and mining and Bitcoin, we really wanted to focus on hash rate. And what did that look like if we were going to be routing hash rate through a smart contract? And what could we do with that? And the first kind of flagship idea, the test product, if you will, is this idea of the Lumerin marketplace, this idea where you can create hash rate contracts, post them up for sale on the marketplace, and then a buyer can come along, purchase the contract. Their payment actually gets locked up in escrow in the smart contract. And then the seller's node actually opens a socket directly to the buyer's node and streams the product they purchased. So if they purchased, you know, 100 terahashes over the next 24 hours, then the node is going to open up a socket to the buyer and it's going to stream 100 terahashes over the next 24 hours. And as it does that, it receives the payment through the smart contract, and buyer and seller don't need to know each other. They don't need to trust each other. It's completely global, anonymous, and decentralized. So, you know, once in place, this is actually going to be the first truly digital commodity where you can buy it and sell it and actually take delivery of it. Which we haven't seen that before.
So let's dig into the product a little bit more, because I'm curious about this, having like an Ethereum background myself. Mm-hmm. What chain is this on? Is this on the chain that the token you're referencing here is its own chain that other people are going to have to like download nodes and run it on, and then that thing is securing itself?
So, or is it on another chain? Eventually, yes. So eventually we'll have a merge mine chain with Bitcoin. It will have all its own transactions and its own smart contract ecosystem and everything. For the initial rollout, so the test, if you will all be on top of Ethereum. The scalability on top of Ethereum is going to be difficult just because the transaction fees. Mm-hmm. So we're actually stocking a lot of the hash rate in the marketplace initially ourselves to front the cost of transaction fees and just really show that the ecosystem can work. The goal is to migrate the entire ecosystem onto our own chain, where we can control transaction fees and we can control a lot of the environmental elements.
Gotcha. Now, another question that comes to mind almost immediately is like, it's a pretty eloquent system to use a smart contract because it enables like execution flawlessly. You know, just tell it to do something, give it an input with a key, and you get an output with a hash rate. The issue that a lot of people have come across with these things is how enforceable they are. However, so like if I've committed to giving 100 pentahash or something like that onto this contract, and then Bitcoin's price goes up and the value of that hash rate becomes more significant, I can essentially like rug pull my hash rate and not point it at the contract like I'm supposed to. And there's some products like that out there right now that are trying to fix that enforceability part of the contract by putting up like slashable Bitcoin that you can put on chain. So like if you are participating and then you decide not to give your hash rate when you're supposed to, your balance gets slashed, things of that nature. Curious what you guys have come up with in order to like fix that problem, which has seemingly persisted for quite a while.
The initial marketplace is going to be very short periods of time. So shorts amount of trust, like short periods of trust, right? So right now it's 24, 48 hours. As these contracts build a reputation of being fulfilled and not canceled, then they'll be able to go for longer periods of time. So the sellers aren't just going to, at least this is the Lumerant marketplace, right? Anyone can fork the marketplace. They could launch their own marketplace using the Lumerant nodes. This is really just kind of our proof of concept. So for the Lumerant marketplace, it's going to be short periods of time. As you gain reputation with completed orders in the contract, then it can be longer and longer periods of time. That doesn't necessarily solve that rug pull scenario. Just because you have a good reputation doesn't mean you can't just decide you don't want to do it anymore. So there is a risk there where you can front a year's worth of contract payment, and then all of a sudden the difficulty drops, the exchange rate goes up, and now the miner doesn't want to sell their hash rate anymore. So there are some ideas we've tossed around of the seller actually posting a stake, basically committing to being a good actor, and if at any point that they become a bad actor, a provable bad actor by not fulfilling the contract, then, reverting some of that stake to the buyer as compensation. A lot of these models for long-term hash rate contracts, we're really going to be leaning on other members of the community and other members of the ecosystem to help solve these problems. We have some ideas. We've talked to a few other groups and developers that have ideas on how to handle it as well. Probably the staking and the slashing is probably the best approach we have at this point. But open to other models. At the end of the day, like what we're building with Lumerant is that proxy routing system that takes its orders off of smart contracts. Whoever wants to, fork, copy, and deploy their own ecosystem with their own set of rules is more than welcome to do so.
Yeah, it's certainly an interesting model, an interesting problem. Talking about the community aspect there, I'm curious about this. So Bitcoin miners, not necessarily Bitcoin maximalists, like they're not one in the same groups. Oftentimes you find a Bitcoin miner who's running, a lot of different mining apparatuses in their mining facility. There are some out there who are just, pure play Bitcoin maximalists. What has been Titan's reception for this sort of product when it comes to Bitcoiners in general, since for the most part, Bitcoin miners are all Bitcoiners?
So that's a great question. So people love the idea. They love the idea of a hash rate marketplace. At the end of the day, it's, miners are profit-driven animals, right? They're told that they can buy this little toaster, and if they plug it in, they're going to get a certain amount of money per day, right? So you show that to a person with a lot of money, and the response is, how many toasters can I have, and where can I put them, and who's going to keep them online? So now we have warehouses and data centers popping up all over the world with, tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, of these, little heat and noise generators. And people are trying to keep them online. And now they're like, okay, well, I'm creating all this hash rate. I want to get paid. The vision is really creating this global marketplace for getting the highest profitability possible. For the miners, they're at the end of the day, they're a utility that they're creating a product that is decentralized, global, and can be sold anonymously. So the reception to the hash rate marketplace has been incredible. We have some of the largest miners on Earth, waiting for it. We've had just a great feedback on that side of it. The fact that it's paired with a token gives people pause, right? So talking about Bitcoin maximalists, where Bitcoin is the true and only cryptocurrency and decentralized ledger and everything else is just complete crap. That's, it's hard to navigate that sometimes. At the end of the day, we have a very, utility specific chain, and we're trying to fulfill a very specific utility of routing data through a peer-to-peer data routing system that is referencing an Ethereum virtual machine or a smart contract engine to know how to route things, right? This is a very specialized system. We often call it a layer zero system because it's really just routing everything else for all the other layers. The goal is not to have it sit on top of anything else, but actually route the data for everything else. I even talked to, you know, the guys at Zcash about, you know, a way of doing anonymous block routing. So, you know, one of the last ways to identify a node is through its IP address and block propagation. But if you shroud the block propagation through another network like Lumerin, then you could truly have an anonymous, node. So there's things like that. There's other utility for the Lumerin node other than just hash rate routing, where having a network token to help broker the transactions, to help put a little bit of friction in the state update is really needed. So I'd say the reception of the hash rate marketplace has been very good. People get a little weird too about the fact that we're launching a Bitcoin hash rate marketplace on Ethereum. That weirds people out a little bit. Because then they're just like, wait, you know, they want to be Bitcoin maxi and they want to support it, but at the same time, it's like it's violating this idea of, you know, oh wait, it's on another ecosystem. But for the most part, it's I think the token has been the hardest one to explain to people the need for it. People just don't realize the immense amount of data that can transact on a network. And if you don't put friction in there, then you'll never really come to consensus on a ledger, because people are just shoving so much data so quick onto these chains.
That makes sense. Yeah, that product in general has just been kind of the holy grail for a while. And I've spoken to a few teams, even on this podcast, about them building it. And the architecture is, I'm sure on a technical level, and for someone who knows as much more than I do, they're quite different. But when I talk to people, they kind of come to some of the similar ideas where they need a smart contract, they need some more functionality, and they often need a token to make a hot hash rate market work, especially one that's like, you know, has no custodian. So that design seems similar. I am always interested by the Bitcoin maxi reaction to these things, because a hash rate marketplace would necessarily make life easier for a lot of Bitcoin miners who have this extremely volatile revenue. And then their costs are also lately pretty extreme, but costs typically, like, you can sort of track those a little bit more easily. And, you know, you want to be able to sell your hash rate somewhere else. So it's a great product, but we've only seen a few products launch so far, and I haven't seen like a ton of adoption from them.
Yeah. So the hardest thing is just understanding like the model that miners are going through right now, because if I showed you a power producer, a power plant, and I said their business model is to generate electricity, and by the way, they only get paid if they use all the electricity they generate. You just think like that's kind of a crazy business model. You mean they're generating electricity and trying to use the electricity at the same time in order to make a profit? Well, now the problem is now they're beholden to the price of electricity and what they can actually get paid for the electricity, and you know how much electricity is actually even worth when they use it, rather than offloading that risk to someone else that's going to use the electricity. So a power provider staying as a utility is the best business model. And we really see that being the same for miners. Miners really should be a utility at the end of the day, is where they're creating hash rate, and their goal is to sell the hash rate and let someone else use it. Let someone else mine blocks with it. Let someone else, you know, route it and, you know, back networks and do whatever. You don't see AWS, the whole business model on creating data centers to use all of the compute power. They sell off the compute power. So that's really where we think sustainability for the ecosystem moving into the future is going to be, is through this idea of a hash rate marketplace where all the miners just basically funnel their hash rate onto this global hash rate grid, if you will. And then purchasers, whether it be financial institutions or governments or individuals, purchase hash rate then to process blocks and transactions.
Yeah, a trustless way to buy like a bundled hash rate future spot product would be pretty slick. And I think it'd make a lot of miners' lives better. Let's move over to the mining pool itself though, and kind of return to the beginning of the conversation, talking about what Titan Pool has been up to, how you guys onboard people. The thing I'm always curious about with smaller pools, and you guys are 19th, I think is the numbers you guys put out.
I think we're 16th as of today. So yeah.
16th, there we go.
We're climbing the ladder. Yeah, we're getting there.
Yeah, climbing the ladder. I've appreciated seeing a lot of teams over the last 2 years put in the hard work and have the market swing in their favor as well, as I mentioned a second ago with the China ban. they've been able to, you know, get into significant territory with hash rate, and Titan Pool seems to be on a similar trajectory and journey. So I'm curious though, what does that path look like from a strategic perspective? What are you guys doing to, in order to gain more hash rate? You mentioned talking to some of the larger miners out there, developing software for them. You have this vision of every large miner should run their own pool. If you could just break that down for me, then I have a few more specific questions afterwards.
Oh, like BD strategy is hard. You know, it's you ask someone, you know, years ago, you know, why are you on Facebook? And they're going to say they're on Facebook because everyone else is on Facebook. You know, and you get that network effect, right? And slowly people started migrating to Instagram. Facebook bought Instagram. People started migrating to TikTok. And who knows what the next platform is going to be. But this idea of network effect seems to be migratory. So why is everyone? Why are all these large miners mining against Foundry? Well, 0% fee, FPPS, and everyone else is mining against Foundry. Why are a lot of international miners mining against Ant Pool, Slush Pool, F2 Pool? It's just because that's where everyone else is mining. The reality is to run an FPPS pool that's 0% fee is incredibly risky. If you have a bad luck run, you empty your reserve and you can't afford to pay out every 24 hours at that point. So miners want to reduce their risk. They want to get paid out every 24 hours. So they want this idea of an FPPS pool, which basically pays them regardless if the pool finds a block or not. But then, you know, with Foundry, we're competing at a space where everyone wants 0% fee or very close to it. Some pools have kind of drawn the line and said we're not reducing their fees, and they have enough, I guess, momentum behind them where they can do that. I know like Luxor, Slush, F2 Pool, they've been very, you know, hard-lined about their fees, and it somewhat works for them. But then they got their lunch got eaten by Foundry, essentially, right? When they're offering something for free. I don't know how long that model is going to last, but that's the competition we're dealing with here. So the best we can do is be completely transparent. We can show people exactly what we built, that we're proud of it. We can show them the benchmarks that the miners around the world have done against the pool. And we can compete on the fee level and say, well, 0% fee, FPPS. But that's as a public pool is not a very sustainable model because we're basically just giving it away for free. So our sales cycle is more or less, as I said earlier, hey, come in our pool, get to know us, get to know the software. And once you're comfortable with that and you scale as a miner and you're over an exahash in hashing power, then let's have the conversation about you running your own pool. It's good for the network. It's good for, you know, signing your own blocks, decentralization of block creation. It's good for your own data. Like, for example, you know, right now, how much is a public mining company's data worth to them? If they're mining against a public pool, that pool has all of their data and knows what their profit and their forecasts are a lot of times before the actual miner does, right? So, you know, given profitability calculations, obviously anyone can kind of take a look at the hash rate and do the calculation, but, you know, the pools are a very intimate partner with the miner. And so especially the publicly traded miners need to take that very, very seriously, not just jump at a pool that, you know, cheap fee, but, you know, this is where your revenue is coming from. You know, can you pick up the phone and call these guys on a weekend and they're going to help you if something goes down? So it's that type of relationship that we offer at Titan. We're a pretty small shop and you can literally, you know, our clients can literally pick up the phone and call me. You know, on a weekend, we jump on a call, we make sure we resolve whatever issues there might be, you know, and that's what we can do as a smaller pool. Now, is that scalable as a public pool? Probably not. When you have like, you know, 10,000 clients and you're trying to take phone calls on the weekend, probably not a good idea. But our goal is to service mid to large miners. Provide really good white glove service, and the goal is to get them using their own pool. And then to wrap that up, Tybo, around it, the pool interaction with us when it comes to a private pool is actually really simple. It's a month to month. It's a simple flat fee. So we're not taking a portion of your profits and in you know, in ratio. It's you pay the flat fee from month to month. You're not under contract. You use us why you like us. And it's our job to earn your business on a month to month basis. And then we work with you on customizations, on report generation, white labeling. It's really a more of a SaaS service at that point.
Okay. I want to play devil's advocate because I can, and I want to see what you got. What we saw this last summer was a few public companies try to go that pool model where they run their own pool. Mm-hmm. And that succeeded in some cases. I think Marathon Pool would be a good example of that. And they're large enough where they can make their own pool. They can run that successfully. They're more than likely white labeling someone else's solution, but it doesn't matter. At the end of the day, they purchase it and they're running it. They are. That's good to confirm.
Through I think DMG is the Marathon Pool. Yep.
Yeah. And so we've seen that be one instance of a success, right? They have enough hash rate under their own management to run a pool and not risk being unlucky for a month and having no Bitcoin for whatever reason. Just how it happens. On the other hand, we saw some other pools. I think Argo is the most specific example of this. And I believe it was this summer. I can't remember which month exactly, but it was in one of their public updates where they're running their own pool or they're working with another public company to run a pool. And they were very unlucky and it hurt their underlying revenue quite a lot. And then you run a tail risk with that, right? Where you get punished in the public markets. So I guess to pitch the question back to you, at what percentage of the network or what exahash value does it really become feasible or safe to be running your own pool? And you mentioned one exahash there, but in my mind's eye, it might be okay for 1 month, but like, what if you have an unlucky period and then you really put your business at risk?
Yeah. And that's when you run your own pool, you're stepping into the seat of this, the FPPS pool model, where essentially you need to pay yourself out, regardless if you find a block or not. That's a huge risk. And for the smaller miners, that risk is a lot greater because you don't know if there's, you know, a software issue or a submission issue, until it could be too late. You sunk too much cost in electricity and you went without a block for a couple of weeks. So as you grow in hash rate, the risk becomes a lot less. You could go, 1 to 2 days without a block, but you'll catch it pretty quick if there's something wrong. That being said, statistically, it shouldn't matter. You should be able to mine with, 100 petahash or one exahash, the same amount over time. And statistically, your luck should always be 100%, right? If you're running everything with optimally in your facility, your luck should always land long-term around 100%. The goal is to essentially survive the luck oscillations, right? So we even have a formula that we've been passing back and forth, even with some other pools, of like, hey, there's a big talk right now about proof of reserve. We want to show and be completely transparent about how much Bitcoin is actually backing our pool. So if you go to pool.titan.io, one of the first things you'll see is our reserve. You'll be able to actually see how much Bitcoin is sitting in our wallet and is backing the pool. To my knowledge, there's no other pool that does that. And I don't know if that's for reason, a good reason or not, but every pool, if you're trusting them with your hash rate, you need to know how much Bitcoin is backing that FPPS payout, right? So as hash rate goes up, it's less risky, but over time, statistically, it should be 100% as long as you have enough Bitcoin in reserve to sustain the luck oscillations. Now, the luck oscillations are going to increase and magnify the more hash rate you have. So if you have, an exahash online, you're going to need, 100, just throwing out a number. I haven't run this through the formula, but, say, 100 Bitcoin in your reserve to withstand the ups and downs of luck. Whereas if you're running, five exahash, maybe you need 500 Bitcoin to withstand the ups and downs of luck. And the idea is you're going to be 100% on the luck factor, within a year. So that's theoretically, like statistically, that's the way it should average out. If Argo went into, being a publicly traded miner and they went into having their own pool, they really need to run their own reserve. They need to treat that pool as it's going to be an FPPS payout, paying them out every 24 hours. but they need to make sure that they stock the reserve with enough Bitcoin to, you know, to level out their books every 24 hours. So they act like that reserve, that 500 Bitcoin or whatever they put into the reserve, is the investment into the pool. And then they look at the FPP payouts every 24 hours. So they run the reports, their accounting, all of their revenue statements, everything are going to go towards that. I mean, that's the model that, you know, we think is best. You know, granted, you know, if they want to run it differently, that's, you know, that's up to them, how they're going to show what blocks they find and all that. All that to be said, that is the risk, right? So, and so the eventual model, and back to Lumerin, and this is where it dovetails with Lumerin, is if a large miner doesn't want to take that risk, then the model should be that they are a utility. They sell off their hash rate to this global hash rate grid. And then pools, or whoever wants to run a pool, is actually bidding against other pools to buy hash rate off of the hash rate grid, right? So, you know, Argo, preferably, you know, they want the highest profitability and the lowest risk. They're going to put all their hash rate through this global marketplace and then let other people mine with it, let other people take that risk. And then they get their steady payout as a publicly traded company.
It looks like you know what you're talking about, so I won't press any more on that question. I mean, nailed it.
Sometimes, you know, I'm great at sounding like I know what I'm talking about, but
yeah, no, I think it's fair. Like, it just comes down to statistics, right? And that one instance for Argo seemed to be an anomaly, and I'm not calling them out on purpose. It's just like a very easy example. Like, they're a public company, yeah, and like
it happens, you know. You know? And yeah, our pool went, I think, like 350%. So our pool does reverse. So we call it effort rather than luck. Mm-hmm. So
yeah,
why some pools say they had, you know, oh, they're sitting at 103% luck, 110% luck. The high numbers for us are bad, because we're looking at effort. How much effort are we putting into finding a block? And, you know, we had a dry spell because we had really low hash rate, and our effort on one of our blocks was like 350%. So that means we should have found 3.5 blocks in the time that we found one block. So, I mean, essentially we paid out 21 Bitcoin for getting 6 Bitcoin. So that's painful. That's not sustainable. You know, since then, like, and then we followed up after that where we had a 13% effort block. We had a 50% effort block, an 80% effort block. So then our luck oscillated the other way and it balanced out. But we had to be able to survive paying out 21 Bitcoin to only get 6 back. Because right at that threshold, when we're paying out our 21st Bitcoin, if our reserve can't handle that, we go bankrupt, you know? So that's the risk. That's the risk that these FPPS pools make. Now the smaller pools, and kind of going back to your other question too, how do smaller pools survive in this? It's really hard. You have to be able to invest in yourself. You have to be able to have a reserve to handle that risk oscillation. And then as we bring on a large client, so for example, we're in the process of bringing on a few large clients. So our hash rate went from, you know, 150 to 200 petahashes, swung up to about 2.4 exahashes over the weekend, and it's just going to keep climbing. But our risk in going bankrupt if we don't have enough in our reserve gets exponentially worse. So we need to be basically be on standby to keep stocking Bitcoin into our reserve to make sure that we can make that FPPS payout every 24 hours, knowing that over time our luck is going to average out at 100%.
So that's actually a great follow-up to my, or a great segue, I should say, to the next point of the conversation, which is like maintaining revenue lines, especially during a bear market. And before we dive into that specifically for what Titan Pool is doing, in this instance, do you guys pull on like lenders to be able to have Bitcoin on tap if need be? Like, how do you guys keep credit lines open in order to like keep that reserve stocked up? I mean, I think that's something that people have speculated about Foundry and Genesis yeah. working together. But for you guys who are a little bit separate from any credit entity, I would assume you just have to have a relationship.
So for us, we are in-house funded. So we, you know, we are very fortunate to have a relationship with Block as our parent company, that have, you know, they've done really well in the space with some of their products. So they backed us early on. We did our own equity raise, a seed round, at the end of 2020, 2021, Coinbase Ventures was actually one of the first into our seed round. So we had some really great support early on. So we're self-funding the pool. So we make sure that we have enough kind of in our coffers to keep upping our reserve as needed and as we need to scale the pool. And this was, you know, this is one of those things of planning ahead, right? This was outside of the bear market. I mean, the bear market hurts everyone. We made sure that we had a lot of our holdings just in USD because we knew that regardless of if Bitcoin goes up or down, like we're going to need to be able to sustain what's going to happen. So it's treasury management at this point. You know, I was on the panel back in Texas just last week, I think it was, where, you know, the first panel, we were talking about treasury management. At the end of the day, we're running businesses. We're running a small business here. Miners are running a small business. Pools are running a small business. And we have to treat it like that. We have to realize that we have obligations to both our employees and to our customers to make sure that we're financially sound. And we don't bet the farm on, you know, holding assets in a certain way that might be deemed risky. So we set our treasury management principles that we're going to hold this much Bitcoin, we're going to hold this much cash. And as we need to, we'll move cash into Bitcoin or Bitcoin into cash to make sure that our treasury risk stays acceptable. And that's running a small business, making sure that our OPEX stays low, that we have a good runway in front of us, and that we stay online. A lot can be said for some of the larger miners that didn't operate like that, that went like, you know, super bullish and said, we're just going to hold Bitcoin and we're never going to sell a thing. But then they just started borrowing money. That's equivalent to the guy taking out the second mortgage on his house to invest in Bitcoin at 65,000. You know, it's speculative and it's incredibly risky. And it was amazing for the person that took the second mortgage out on their house and they invested in Bitcoin at 3,000 in 2020. But it did not work out for the guy that did the same thing a year later, you know. Yeah. But they're both taking a risk and they're both speculating on it. And, you know, I'm running a company here. I can't take that risk. I can't speculate. I have to make sure that people stay employed and clients stay serviced. So I would encourage miners to do the same thing, to treat their operation as a business and to make sure that they have the right runway, to make sure that they're not speculating, to take acceptable risk. At the end of the day, unless your employee is getting paid out in Bitcoin, regardless of price, you're going to need to hold some USD.
A candid warning that may be too late, Ryan. There's a lot of people who are not doing so well right now. So you know, let's get your go ahead. Actually,
I have friends that work at a lot of these companies. Some of our former employees have actually moved over and work at some of these companies. So it's hard to watch, you know. We're all tied in together in this ecosystem. It's still a very small ecosystem, all things considered, and mining even more so. When we go to these mining conferences, it's guys that we've been working shoulder to shoulder with for years now, and we're scaling together. And sometimes we just have lessons that, you know, we need to learn in this industry that have already been learned in other industries. You know, it's, we're still very, very new here. And a lot of the leaders in the space, a lot of the CEOs and heads of these companies are very, very new, including myself, to leading companies of this size. We found ourselves in the right place at the right time, doing the right thing. And, you know, we scaled because of it, and we raised a lot of money. We're making a lot of money, and we were doing really, really well. And now we're, you know, getting hit by the 2x4 of bear market across the face. Right. And, thankfully I've been through this a few times before. So I, you know, you can kind of see it coming. So it's, I don't know what more to say about it. It's, you know, we're cyclical. I can't even say it. We're going cycles. We go in cycles. Yeah. You can edit that out. Right. We go in cycles here, and we're just doing it again. We're probably going to go in the cycle right up through the halvening again, and we'll probably see an upswing in September after the halving, just like we saw last time and the time before that and the time before that. Because we're in the cycle, and we see the same thing historically. I saw the same thing in 2013, where we saw the market peak right around end of November, Thanksgiving time, right? We saw, I think, $1,200 Bitcoin in 2013, and I was like freaking out because I hadn't really bought any. I had been mining, but I hadn't bought more Bitcoin, and I thought, oh, I missed my chance. The market came down, and I bought at $900 in December, and I was like, okay, at least I got in. And then the market kept dropping right through 2014, and I'm just like, what did I do? Like I put like all this money into Bitcoin. I'm working as a low end software engineer at a startup, and I'm thinking I did the most terrible decision ever. I've only been doing Bitcoin stuff for maybe a year and a half at this point. And it was hobby. I'm running GPUs in my garage. I'm buying S3s and sticking them in the addition of my house. This is a hobby. But the technology is sound. At the end of the day, I'll point this out every once in a while, and it's probably happened since, but the one that reminds me, I always think of is, a couple years back, someone moved $1 billion or just over $1 billion from one Bitcoin account to another Bitcoin account. The transaction went through for about $700 in transaction fees. No one knew who did the movement. I mean, people speculated that it was like an exchange rebalancing their books or whatever. But honestly, no one in the general public or, most people looking at the chain knew who made the movement of $1 billion from one address or one custodian to another custodian for $700. It was settled within 30 minutes, trustlessly settled, anonymously settled globally in 30 minutes for $700. I can't think of another service on the face of the earth that could move $1 billion anonymously with no government getting involved, no bank getting involved. And that's Bitcoin. At the end of the day, that technology still exists. And when I bought Bitcoin at $900 and it dropped back down to $150 and I'm freaking out, it didn't matter because at the end of the day, that technology was the same. And that technology is desperately needed when we have governments reaching into people's bank accounts, when we have banks reaching into people's bank accounts and freezing assets. When I have anyone that I write an ACH check to can take my routing number and my bank account number and can reach into my bank account and take money. When we're in this type of a ridiculously stupid system, we need Bitcoin. We need these decentralized ledgers that are trustless, that are not issued by governments, that are not controlled by just local fraudulent banking institutions that want to take your money, lock it up, and then lend it out and give you shit interest. I'm sorry, this system is awful, And at the end of the day, we need to have Bitcoin. And people are waking up to it in droves. And just because we have some investors and some large institutions that are playing games with, OTC services and dumping large amounts of Bitcoin on news and rebuying it up, at the end of the day, we see Visa coming into the space. We see Shell coming into the space. We see all these large companies waking up. And they're the ones that are running the infrastructure. They're the ones running the financial services. And now they're getting into the space. If that's not like a buy indicator, I've never heard one.
I don't think we can top that Michael Saylor-esque rant at the end there. So we'll have to close it there. Ryan, thank you so much for joining the Mining Pod. I appreciate learning. I learned a lot about the statistics on that and then how you guys are building that hash rate marketplace as well. So appreciate your time greatly.
Cool. Thanks for having me on. It's been fun.